So thank you so much for listening to Blue Sky Radio. My name is Yenny. This is at Radio Waterloo. You can find us online at radiowaterloo.ca. If you live in Kitchener and Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, you can find us at 102.7 FM. Today I'm talking with Michael Aku Rodriguez. He is a producer, filmmaker, writer, musician, and he has a company called So Be It Film. So thank you so much, Michael, for coming on Blue Sky Radio today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes. My name is Michael Aku Rodriguez. I am Apache Mescalero and Zapotec heritage. We were raised very spiritual as kids. And right now, at this time, I always wanted to do something in creating through the arts. So I just, you know, decided to put my passion for film, music, art, and photography together. And through the ages, I was able to evolve into developing those different skills and providing services. And not only that, but, you know, making a living. So during all that time, I decided to go independent, you know, to follow a dream. So I created a production company called So Be It Films. And from there, it led to what I'm doing now. And that's all I do now is just create films. I compose, I do photography work, I do some artwork, and so it's been very beautiful and very productive.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. That's really amazing. I mean, a lot of people give up on, if they ever had a dream. I don't think our society really wants us to have a dream. It might tell us that some people have a dream, but I mean, few people have the courage or the vision to actually go for it. What is your vision with your productions company and with the things, the projects that you get involved with?
Well, you know, I first started, you know, in the whole industry was just being a production assistant, you know, learning the ropes, learning how to do this, that, and it came down to where I was able to invest a certain amount of, you know, funding in getting that kickstarting the projects. So my intent was to really, you know, help local organizations, companies, and individuals in trying to tell their story or being a vision where they couldn't. So from that, it just kind of kicked off into what I'm doing now, and I do a lot of work dealing with injustice, human rights, the earth, and animals, and cruelty, and what's been happening, and it's just kind of those issues that are not quite brought to the surface, and certain individuals don't really know what's going on, and I've made it my job to kind of be that voice for those who don't have one.
Wow, that's incredible. I'm curious about how you got involved and got to know Nita Ryan and Thundering Hooves.
So I was living up in Connecticut, and I was working a lot up there with wage theft and immigrant rights. And for spiritual reasons, I was sent back. We have some of the elders who had requested certain individuals to come back because, you know, certain traditions were going to be passed. So I decided to, you know, pack everything up and come back and, you know, study under the elders, and came here. And, you know, I've always been active in protesting and just being that voice. So I came back home and found out that, you know, there were certain issues that were occurring over here. And, you know, I've always wanted to, you know, help, you know, push that sort of awareness where, maybe it needed that little push, or it needed that certain, you know, energy to help it, you know, move forward. So I was wanting to create a protest on trying to get, trying to get the park. Ballarat Park is actually one of the largest natural spring swimming pools. So you have people across the whole world come over here during the summertime. And growing up here as a kid, you know, we used to go out there and swim all the time and have a really great time. And you'd have, you'd have, I think it's like 300,000 people a year go to that one little area. So they ended up having a capacity where certain people couldn't come in. You know, I think it was like 2,000 or some people come in. So you had lines outside. Now we're talking about 100 degrees weather, right? And it's hot.
Yeah.
So you have kids, you know, out there, and the speed limit there was around 70. So you'd have like these 18-wheelers passing real fast, and you have this platoon of cars waiting outside trying to get in just so the kids could go swimming during the summer. So I was kind of upset with that. So I said, okay, you know what? I have a camera, I have a lens. Let's make something happen. And then ended up finding about this individual named Mr. Ryan, who used to work there, and went to go talk to a little store there in the corner, and ended up meeting Mrs. Ryan, and then from there it just kind of kicked off. And understood what, you know, what was occurring there on that part of, you know, that part of history and that part of the world. And, you know, horses have been always very sacred to certain, you know, Native tribes, been very sacred to us as well. And to hear the story of, you know, the slaughter industry and over 200,000 to 300,000, you know, a year go to, you know, Canadian borders and Mexican borders. So it kind of caught my attention. And, you know, being a very spiritual individual, I always ask the elders and the ancestors to guide me in certain situations. So it seemed like my destiny coming to study had landed this certain project in my, you know, at my feet. And I said, okay, this is what I need to be doing, then so be it.
So be it. Yeah, it's really horrendous what's happening with horses, and they definitely are voiceless, other than the people who get involved to try and raise awareness and get this information out there, because it is horrendous.
Yes, you know, discovering what was happening, you know, it touched me, because, you know, if you really look back in history, if it wasn't for that horse, that animal, we wouldn't be where we're at now. I mean, what that horse did to build this country and you know, and in many different ways is astonishing. And for, you know, the iron horse, I call it the iron horse, the car, come in and just totally disregard, you know, these horses for everything that they've done was, I don't know, I had to really look at myself and define that one moment where that shift had occurred, and at the same time to find out where they're going now, you know. And then, you know, I know certain countries and certain areas of the world, there's different delicacies with different, you know, varieties of food, but, you know, here, you know, in the Americas, we don't eat our horses. I know certain, you know, tribes and certain traditions, you know, if needed to, out of honor, you know, it's eaten, but the conditions and what I discovered and what was happening to these horses was, it really saddened me, you know, and as a storyteller, you know, I don't really consider myself a filmmaker. I consider myself a storyteller. I had to really sit down and really contemplate on, you know, this tragedy that's occurring, you know, and interesting now with society where, you know, it just doesn't seem like there's no honor or respect or even dignity with anyone. It's kind of just a fast-paced society where it's a fast fix, or if it doesn't help, then, you know, it's not a part of their consciousness, so to speak. So it was a very interesting medium, and then really trying to tell the story, I think, was another one, because, you know, you're dealing with slaughtered horses, you're dealing with trailers, you're dealing with, you know, especially as a filmmaker, you're putting yourself in a position where you don't know how that horse is going to react because of the conditions it's in.
Yeah.
So I had to take interesting steps in really filming this project because of that same awareness, you know. You know, a lot of them, they're really scared. That's the bottom line. They don't understand what's going on. And one thing I really realized about these beautiful horses is, you know, they do have a conscience. They are fully aware of what's happening, you know. So it was a very interesting project to really help push forward. And, you know, the conditions in Presidio, it's a border town in Mexico, you know, and discovering the conditions that were happening there, the heat, and what was being, you know, presented was a very interesting story, you know. And I think that story needed to be told. And I think, you know, I think holding individuals accountable for actions that they do, I think it's a beautiful tool that, as a storyteller, I have. With that lens, I can create an awareness and help push forward, you know, what is occurring, what is happening, and hold certain individuals accountable for what they have done. And I think with this film, it has done that. And, you know, very interesting thing I did discover too is over 98% of the individuals who are supporting the cause are women, which I thought was very beautiful. And I thought, wow, what a cool accomplishment that, you know, that is happening. But the saddest thing I discovered is that none of them really want to work together. It was more of what I like to call the me, and not the we.
Yeah.
So it saddened me, but really, really bad, because you had really beautiful individuals that had that potential to really push forward the cause, but yet it was a battle within the cause that, yeah, it's a really sad thing. You know, and I've discovered that in a couple of films that I've done where individuals, they don't, it's not working together as a team. It's more of who's got the biggest flag and where's the flag going to be, you know, put. So it's pretty sad.
Yeah, a lot of egos.
Right.
And it doesn't help the cause because it is such an uphill battle. To help these horses and even the world in general, it's such an uphill battle that if we don't work together, we have less chance of making changes. But
correct. And you know, I think with what I do and who I am and what I bring to the table, I am a voice, and I think it's the individuals who take that idea and run with it is that's the beginning, that's the kickstarter of everything, you know. And then where is it going to go, and what's it going to do in order to help that change, you know, move forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful thing with you know, technology now. You know, 10 years ago, you know, we can't do what we're doing now. This whole social media vibe thing, it's you know, it has a positive and a negative effect in today's society. But at the same time, you know, with films that I've done, there's no way I could have got this film out across the world without this, you know, social media platform. So, very interesting medium there.
Yeah, I hear you. It's technology is definitely double-edged and everything, but with the positive of being able to connect to each other and get information out there, that's definitely the positive.
Yeah.
So Nita Ryan obviously is somebody who is not ego-oriented. She's very love-oriented and a passionate woman. I've spoken with her, and she's done a lot for those horses. And so you're talking a little bit about the story that you wanted to tell. So what did you find, actually, that's happening?
You know, as a storyteller, you know, one thing I discovered is just the conditions, you know, these horses are facing. You know, some of them are very malnutritioned, abused, sick, very, very sick. And over 80% of the horses going to slaughter are sick. And for them to be used for, I mean, human consumption, it was very, let's just say, it turned my stomach. That if these other countries only knew where that meat was coming from and what condition that meat was in, I guarantee you'd have a lot of individuals that would probably not want to eat, you know, horse meat. And that was one thing I really discovered in this whole thing is, and then what's interesting about the whole thing is that nobody knows where these horses are coming from. No one knows. They're being rounded up in different conditions, different areas, different locations. Nobody has a sheet that's saying, okay, this, you know, like a tradition, you know, mm-hmm. or cow system we have here, you know, with cattle. You know, at least you know who, what is, where it's coming from, what it's been fed, what you know, certain things have occurred. And at the same time, even the cattle industry is not a healthy, you know, because they're, you know, it's mass production. Mm-hmm. And how can you feed the mass without providing that sort of chemical balance in order to get that out? So one thing I discovered with the horse industry is it's kind of like a free-for-all. You know, you'll get you a trailer full of horses. Where they come from, it doesn't really matter. Here you go, and all right, we're sent off. And another thing I discovered is that over 30% of the horses, it was called an emergency slaughter, where they were sick, contaminated with pneumonia. Over 30% of them were, and a lot of them couldn't even stand up, and it was considered an emergency slaughter, where, you know, you'd get dump trucks, and you'd get these backhoes to come in, they lift them up, and they just throw them inside this machine that does its job. So it was, you know, there's times where I had to turn around and, you know, shed a tear.
Yeah.
It was that, you know, it was that drastic.
Oh my God.
So it was it was a very, you know, and with the film, there's been films out there that really express that sort of graphic detail. And I think with this film, there needed to be a different medium in order to help express it, you know. And in writing this film and directing it, I wanted to express more of a happy medium or somewhere an alternative medium, a holistical sort of concept where film told a story, but at the same time, there was a beautiful, happy ending that not only could we create that awareness for the children, but for the adults and the parents of those children to create that awareness and plant that seed that would help future generations, you know, be aware of what's happening and what's, you know, what's going on. So I think with this film, creating that sort of medium there where it wasn't too graphical, but yet taking it into a different avenue, really helped the film move forward in a different view than your normal, you know, slaughter-bound documentaries that have been out there. And they're really great films. I'm not putting them down in any way. They're awesome films. I love them. But now, you know, what's interesting, too, is society, you show them the facts, you show them the graphic details, and they don't want to hear it, but yet they don't do anything about it. So how do you create that medium where you allow them, well, you invite them into the story. You invite them to be a part of the story, and I think that's where the film really came out.
That's really incredible, and you're so right. I know for myself, once I became aware of the horse slaughter industry here in North America, all I could do was to try and share this information, and it's very graphic, and a lot of people are, they don't want to think about it, and they kind of turn, you know, it's like the ostrich a little bit. It's too much. You don't want to think about it. And so I also try to find other ways of getting the information out there, because really it's about the horses. And like you said too before, you know, these beings we depended on to be where we are today, and you know, without them we wouldn't have been able to come this far. And it's questionable if where we are is at a good place, but for sure horses didn't make it bad for us. You know, they worked side by side with us. And we owe them so much more than this. And they shouldn't be discarded like garbage and abused and tortured. So thank you for your strength. I can't imagine what it would have been like to witness these innocent, beautiful horses en route to slaughter. I can't imagine. An emergency slaughter, like, I haven't even heard of anything like that. So, I mean, the information is so necessary to get out there.
Yes, and you know, with every documentary, I focus on and develop, you know, the storyline. It was a very touching, because you know, there's some projects where it really gets you, you know, and to have horses, you know, sacred, and to have this happening, yeah, it was like losing touch of a piece of you, and really realizing what exactly these conditions they were facing, and to be able to see it, to understand it, was, yeah, very moving. And then how do you express that in a way where you don't turn away individuals, but say, hey, listen, this is what's happening, what can we do about it, you know? I think that was the beautifulest key, and using art as a medium in this project, what sent the idea in such a beautiful way, where it was very inviting, and I think that was a really beautiful key on the film.
Mm-hmm. So what has the reception been like for the documentary?
You know, it's as any film that I've, you know, directed, produced, and, you know, written, you have that, you know, one thing I've discovered with social, you know, media platforms is those who never had a voice now have a voice. And it's kind of a positive and negative, because you can have individuals who've never had a voice. When they have a voice, you get that certain negative, and you get that certain positive when, you know, nowadays in society, you can put a person's name and put something of what they did, and nobody knows the truth, but yet they judge it without even understanding where it come from, what had happened, what the truth is. So with the film, it's been a very positive, but at the same time, it's been a negative, because, you know, the focus on the film was horses. So you have that certain medium of individuals who love horses, and then you have that medium of art. So you have those two mediums together. Now, there's not a lot of people who love art. They don't get it. They think it's a waste of time. They don't understand why that's even possible. So you get that sort of reaction from certain individuals who, you know, don't support certain things. And instead of having an open mind to, you know, cultures, to society, to the world, it's allowed it to not be able to evolve in a way where, you know, we ourselves are kind of stagnated and not allowing ourselves to be open to certain things. So in a way, the film has taken a direction where with anything that you do, you present it, you know, and it's society that soaks it up, whether negative or positive. And with this film, it's been a very beautiful, positive thing, you know? And yes, you do have that negative there, but at the same time, it's been very positive. And the reason why is because that art concept and inviting the next generation to understand exactly what's going on. So.
Yeah. And I mean, when you talk about horse slaughter, and we talk about horse slaughter here in Canada, there's even live shipping of horses overseas to Japan that happens because it's, like you mentioned before, a delicacy. It's considered a delicacy, fresh horse meat.
Right.
And the conditions that these horses have to face, I mean, it makes me wonder, you know, how can anybody enjoy? Nobody should suffer. You know, like, how much suffering do we allow in this world? We are all connected. As long as some people are suffering, or we permit suffering, we really are all suffering, you know? We are all connected, so we have to think about everybody. We have to think about the whole planet, and right now we are so out of balance. It's, you know, we're not sustainable. Although we see, obviously, that there's a new wave. A lot of people are opening their eyes and willing to commit with their hearts and their minds and get involved, and but the powers are so powerful that, you know, we're so far out on the one side of the pendulum that, you know, we can't do the whole thing about divide and conquer. We need to all come together.
Yes, I agree. You know, with technology, you know, the positive and negative comes in, you know, where, you know, we depended on nature to survive, and we understood nature. We understood the balance, the seasons that came in and out. Now, we live in these comfort zones, and, you know, we're materialistic. I mean, that's the bottom line. And there's those that try to really keep it natural. But at the same time, you know, person the other day said, well, if you're saving the planet, then why do you drive your car? I mean, you drive your car, you're polluting the air, and I looked at that, you know, and I questioned that, and it's like, you are right, mm-hmm. I do, but then in today's society, what do we do? How can we do it? You know, how do we move forward without creating that sort of positive, but at the same time, is that a negative at the same time? So, you know, I've had a lot of individuals who just kind of look at my work and say, you know, you're a hypocrite, or you're this and this. And so, you know, you always get that positive and negative thing out of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we live in a society that's providing a system that we have to operate in, you know, right now, can we, sure, we can own horses, but how long is it going to take a horse to get to one location to the other one that honestly a vehicle would honestly get us? So society has created that social consciousness and materialistic understanding that we actually have to live in it. It's become that instead of, you know, understanding the beauty and the balance cultures and the world. And so I think that's one thing too that I've been looking at as a storyteller is all that shift that occurred, you know, going back to, you know, in horses, when we depended on them. I mean, look at where we are now. Look at the shift. Look at everything that's occurred from that day to now. You know, people can say technology is a very beautiful thing. Indeed, it is. But at the same time, I think it's a very harmful thing, as in grounding ourselves to, you know, to nature, to the basics.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely have come too far. We can't have everything we want. Like, sometimes when we think about something we want and we think we need to have something, you know, it's like traveling across the globe every day or, you know what I mean? Like, we can't do it, or traveling for business every single day or commuting hours every day. Fossil fuel industry definitely is killing the planet, so we need to get off of that. And everybody that's invested in the fossil fuel, they don't want us to get out of the fossil fuel. So the money, I guess we need to not be so dependent on money. But, you know, you're right. We are dependent on our lifestyle. And maybe it's in how we get from point A to point B. You know, I mean, it's crashing. I mean, the whole economy, like, it's crashing. Whatever we want, Earth can only give us so much.
I have to agree as well. And, you know, with these certain cameras that I use, I have to depend on technology, you know, certain upgrades every year, you know, but at the same time, there's, going back to the fossil fuel, I have an upcoming project that I've been working on for the past 4 years, and it's called Shattering Sacred Ground. And it's dealing with the fossil fuel industry. But up here in this area where I'm from, you know, where I'm from up here, it was all Apache land. You know, I lived close to up here by the Apache Mountains. And all this was Apache Mescalero. And obviously when the forts were built, you know, a lot of tribes were forced in certain areas. You know, I don't like to use the word reservation, but so right now, what they had discovered over here was natural gas, you know. And I don't understand the word natural gas, and then all the chemicals and all the basically all the technology it takes in order to get that out of the ground, and then what's left behind. So there's a film I've been working on for 4 years, and it's still going on. And what has happened here in the past 2 years is very astonishing. It's horrible. There's pollution now, earthquakes. I live in a certain area where there's 5 natural springs. And we're talking about, I'm out here in the Apache Mountains. It's deserty, but there's water. There's underground water everywhere, and it's being destroyed. For what? When it's already been discovered that, you know, solar and wind provides more free, non-polluted energy than the fossil fuel. And it's really sad to see this happening, but at the same time, it's like you said, you know, who has that pocket full of, you know, funding that's, you know, providing that for this industry, and who has their wallet in that industry.
Yeah.
And what's it really going to take? You know, are we going to destroy this planet enough to where you know, we have nothing left. I mean, even now they're starting to send rockets out to find other life on other planets because, why? Because we destroyed this and we don't care about it. I mean, it's a very interesting concept. And, you know, I always get that positive and negative approach as well. So I think as a storyteller, I just show facts.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of the medium in the whole understanding. I'm not here trying to put anyone down or anything. I'm just here showing the facts of what has occurred and what is going to occur. And that's what I do, even with social justice and human rights. You know, I do the same thing. You know, I'm not against, I'm not with, I'm just the medium in there sharing that story, revealing the truth, being an eye where there isn't one.
Well, that's really important. And film has an ability to get people's attention. And the thing about people that I find really astonishing is that, you know, when you talk to individuals, most people have a really good heart on them, you know. They don't like suffering. They don't like cruelty. So I feel like there's hope. But we also live in the kind of world where, like you said too, like it's very fast-paced. Everybody is on the go. And I don't understand how we don't feel connected to nature, because this is where we come from and we depend on it. But like it seems like there's a bit of a dichotomy between people feeling entitled to what they need to have, you know, two cars in the driveway and upgrades and this and that and vacations or more than the other person, I guess. And I mean, now particularly as well with all of the state of the world with more wars and more conflicts and, you know, like, haven't we already had enough of it? You know, like, it seems like most people are able to get along fine, but somehow politicians and maybe corporations and, you know, like, people are profiting off of us arguing, basically, as opposed to everyday people, we get along. Like, I don't see any neighbors trying, you know what I mean? Like, we're simple people. Most people just think about their kids and think about their community, and we're not evil, but we just can't be allowed to. I don't understand why we would believe a media that tells us that some people are not good people, these people we should fear. Like, all of this fear-mongering makes no sense whatsoever.
You know, you have an interesting point there, you know. As a storyteller, you know, I do a lot of research. To be honest with you, I'm a history geek. I love history from the beginning of what they say it is to what they're now discovering, that saying that what we did know is totally wrong. And then you have certain belief systems that totally agree that this is the way it is, but yet you have different parts of the world that are discovering different things that nobody knows. Nobody knows anything of what was what, when it was, who was where, why they were where. And one thing I have discovered in doing all this research is history repeating itself.
Yeah.
And history, you know, one thing that was always taught to us traditionally is that Mother Nature can go so far till she says, I've had enough. And she comes to clean. We call it a cleanse. And it seems like right now that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
You know, especially here in the States, you know, there's a lot of, it's pretty crazy here. And to see different things occur, and I think we were talking about this before, where, you know, climate change, you know, it's really, it's real.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing it.
Yeah.
We are seeing it. And these certain medias are trying to put it down, creating some sort of fact that it isn't, when I've done a lot of research. And please, you know, to those listeners out there, I'm not saying believe in it or not, but there's facts, and that's what I have always discovered, is I go out there and I do the research on facts.
Yeah.
And I study those, and I look at that, and it is. I mean, even in certain areas, over, 33 decades, it's never snowed, and it's snowing. Or certain areas where it's freezing cold, you have a 100 degrees temperature, hot sun day, which is, never been recorded in recorded history. So what does that really explain? What does that show, to what's happening?
Yeah.
And I think right now, there's certain things that are occurring where you go back and read history, and it's the same thing all over again. The same game being played all over again. And, when is it going to stop? Will it ever stop? Will this generation ever see that? Will there ever be peace? Is that possible? And that's one thing as a storyteller that I really look at. I'm all about being peaceful, creating something where we can all be happy and have a playground where we can all play instead of, bashing, fighting, destroying. But you have different roles, you have different individuals who play different roles who don't quite see how some of us see or point of views. So I think right there is where, I can come in.
Yes.
As a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And, I give thanks, too, to all those other documentary filmmakers who are out there telling those stories, who are out there in those certain areas, getting that footage and bringing it to, bring it to the forefront so we as individuals can see and understand, what's not being seen is being seen. And that's one thing I guess I'd have to say I really respect about what I do is, a lot of those filmmakers take really, really big risks trying to get that story out.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a lot of courage and commitment. And it's not easy to be committed to anything because money is such a motivating factor. And we all need to have, a roof over our head and we need to eat. But there's just so much more to life than accumulating what we don't need. Like, there's only so much that you can use in a day even, or what you need to have. Like, the selfishness that is going on it takes away from having something. I read the other day something about how the 26 wealthiest individuals on the planet together have more wealth than like 50% of the population of the planet, type of thing. Like, it is so out of balance that it's no wonder we are where we're at.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you do, and if you go look at history, you can see where those certain mediums start coming to play, where, for instance, Rome, one of the biggest empires, got sacked by a bunch of peasants. I mean, seriously, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
I mean, how beautiful. I mean, to think that all is lost when a couple of peasants come in and take over a whole entire, the biggest empire ever. What does that tell you?
That's such an interesting point. I mean, it does say it's kind of a little bit like the French Revolution also. I remember reading about the French Revolution and how, crops were failing year after year, and yet the king is eating and they live in affluence still and people are starving. But how many times do we have to get to that point before we realize that what you have and what I have and, it matters more that we have community and that your children are eating and my children are eating and that our neighbors are okay. You know what I mean? Like, community has to apply to everyone. I'm not better than you. You're not better than me. If you come from this country or that country, like, we've come up with all of these countries to begin with. We all come from Earth. This is our home. So.
Yes. And, you know, one thing too, you know, is, you know, here in the States, it's, you know, there's one thing, and I'm working with another film. It's called Injustice in Heaven. This film is based on just immigrant rights. And who really is an immigrant here in the States? You know, you really go back and you read history, you gotta understand that everyone here is immigrants.
Yeah.
I mean, to look back and say, you know, even conditions that are happening now with certain, you know, one thing, one thing I'd like to bring up is when I lived in New York and Connecticut, I understand it was very interesting because I talked a lot about different Jewish individuals, Irish, French, and back in the day it was Jews, it became Irish, and then it was French, and then Italians, and then now it's the Hispanic race who is in line to, who's being ridiculed for being immigrants, when if you look at history as well, this whole entire United States and Mexico was basically one. And I was looking at old maps and found out that Mexico was actually all the way up to Canada. So very interesting point. And then you have the Spaniards who came in and did their little story there too as well, which, you know, I think the whole immigrant thing, I mean, why? When individuals come here to do something better for themselves, sure, you get certain individuals who see certain different points of view, but this is basically a society now where everybody is everybody. I mean, they did the statistics on cultures, and you have so many different cultures blending with other cultures where everybody's everybody now. I mean, DNA is being tested on a lot of different individuals, even a bunch of native tribes, where they're finding that there's different other cultures involved. And this whole immigrant concept is, I don't know, I think it's a foolish name and a foolish game that someone, you know, tried to create a flag and say, okay, here, this is me, and this is what we're doing. And with this film, Injustice in Heaven, I'm looking on only facts, you know, educate, basically, and helping to educate who is who, what is what, and what is the term immigrant.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it seems like rulers are allowed to make the definition of who is the right one and who is the wrong one, basically. And people go where they need to. I mean, if a country goes and invades another country, chances are those people are going to want to get out of there, some of them. So if we can create peace, then a lot of people would probably stay where they come from, you know? But I mean, borders, we've created the borders too. I mean, that's something that, you know, men came up with. That's not something that Earth came up with, to make a border.
Correct. Separation, you know, the whole, back to history, the whole divide and conquer concept.
Yeah.
You bring a whole entire culture together, they'll rule the world. But if you keep them separated, ignorant, divided, they're easy to conquer,
yeah,
easy to manipulate. And that's been proven. That's been proven with the native tribes. A lot of the native tribes here, even our culture, where they did studies on how to manipulate, how to conquer and separate. And they learned, these tyrants learned how to control the system and how to put the system in play from ruling and conquering other cultures. Yeah. I mean, this is really European-based concepts, and a lot of that is in that film as well, where it's a lot of European-based manipulation, system belief systems that were created in certain areas and places in order to, conquer.
Yeah.
And they've done they've done a really good job. I mean, that might sound very negative, but I had to give it to them. That's pretty good.
I know, it's really sad, actually. And
right, it is.
And I mean, those are the real criminals there that would harm other people and kill them and have all of these ideas of conquering. And those are the real criminals. And
right,
and yet they'll never see that day in court, right?
One thing that's always been spiritual to our traditions is that we keep strong as a culture, and no matter what comes to us, we stand on our own 2 feet with our honor and with our spirit and with those that are guarding us, and we stand strong in who we are as a spirit, an individual, a person, and what we believe in, and what we've always understood. And that strength, to me, is rooted in this earth, and we, as different cultures and as native people, we stay strong to that and keep that alive for other generations to come, and let them learn from what has been taught, what has happened, and what is coming. And when will that day come where we can let all the past go, and that we can finally live, all of us, in just harmony, in just some